morning, gentlemen. How are we doing, guys? Good. Sorry to keep you waiting.
How are you, man?
Oh, I'm great. My computer, you know, one of those, it's like once every 6 months, your computer just doesn't connect to Wi-Fi. So that was my morning. Not a big deal. Not a big, just a quick restart, but just not expected. How you guys doing?
Good. Dude, I was thinking about you yesterday when I was looking at your story. Like, are you okay, man, with the like lack of certificate and all the roadblocks you're facing? I was like a little bit worried about you. Like, you doing all right?
Well, dude, I'm pretty stressed. And thanks for worrying. No, it's no license still. My residency didn't even send out the diploma yet. And then this year to register for oral boards, they're not letting you register. I don't know if this was always this way, but I remember previous people, they could just register for it. In order to get the results of part one, I need to be able to apply for part two. And they're not letting me do that without the state license. And the state license has been holed up, the diploma issue. It's been very weird. I talked to them. They said they could extend the deadline for me to register for oral boards. But it's just been a weird, like, bunch of issues. I don't know, a bunch of speed bumps. But
I feel like this is a common issue. Like, in lots of states, you get all these people graduating from residencies, from dental school, you know, all at the same time, you know, in end of June, July, and they all need licenses. It's like they should have some sort of process for like new grads so that they can get them their stuff, you know, because it's like they know they're going to get, you know, so many, you know, hundreds of applications coming in all at the exact same time. You know, and you want to start
from
working
all the professions too. And I literally called them up and they're like, they have two departments and one manages about 25 professionals. And the other one that I'm talking to manages 23 professionals. So it's like dentistry. It's like veterinarians. It's law. It's chiropractors. It's PT. And why do we have, it's an office of two people. It's Francine and Audrey. I know now, I've been calling her every day for 2 weeks. Was for lunch, Audrey. And we're waiting for another department that you can't call to like go through an email where all these professionals that just graduated send like certain forms to, and you know, to upload for the application. And I don't know. Anyway,
funny predicament. Hang in there.
Anyway, how you guys do? Oh, so Dr. Figueroa, you're someplace golf? Is that where he is right now?
Yeah, he's seven, so he's got golf lessons this morning and baseball later. So I usually take him to that stuff. So, but my wife's gonna do it this morning. So.
And baseball. Oh man, you guys play golf?
I don't know. I like to play. I don't want to say I'm like a good golfer or anything, but I enjoy getting out there.
That's fair. That's fair. I feel you on that. Just trying to beat the last time, right?
Yeah.
You too, Dr. Yenzer?
Yeah, I've been playing like 3 years though. I'm also garbage, you know, like mid-90s, but I live in Pinehurst and we're members here. So if you ever want to slide through and do a little lecture residency and play some, Aaron's coming down in November, so you're always welcome.
November? Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. You guys got to keep me updated. Hey, real quick, let's hop over to the boards review course because this would be a great, I just pulled up the flyer over here on the PDF. So this, you guys run this course. How long have you guys been doing this?
Gosh, Andrew, what was the first year? It was 21
or 22. I honestly forget. Somewhere around there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is our fourth year running the course.
Fourth year running the course. Excellent. I've heard so much good reviews on your course. I've heard so many people passing from it and I'm like, I want to pass if I can finally register for it. But, I'm just going to throw this out here quick and then we can chat about that. And I want to get more of your guys' story for it to be on a personal level. It looks like October 9th through 11th this year, 2025, we're in St. Louis, actually Sheraton Westport Plaza Hotel. And then it's 3 days. I think it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah. I'm not going to pull up the calendar and everything.
No, it's definitely Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We felt like it was a little easy. It's another day off of work for people coming in. But it was kind of easier to deal with flying out, and we didn't want people feeling like they had to leave early on Sunday to catch a flight to get home and that kind of thing. So
yeah. Excellent. And I saw that it also, Dr. Yenzer, I wanted to thank you for the introduction over last weekend on what to study for, the hot topics, the key stuff. You have the slides there. And anyone that's going to listen to this episode, I highly recommend going to that introduction to get an idea of what to study for, but then also how to sign up for this course and stuff. How did you guys link up to start giving the course?
Yeah, so there's an awesome fellowship in St. Louis, and there's a big group of guys, a lot of them who either run it or did it like Aaron did. And I was lucky enough to be practicing teaching at a residency in Georgia, my last duty station, with a guy who had done the fellowship. And I'm nerdy about medicine and like that kind of stuff. So when they were building a course and looking for a medicine guy, they were lucky enough to tap me. So I'm the outlier who's now along for the ride with these amazing guys.
No, we were very lucky to tap into Andrew Yenzer and get him into the course and get his knowledge into our course for sure. So, but yeah, a bunch of us I all kind of did the same fellowship down in St. Louis, and I kind of connected that way, and it's been really fun. It's, the course is also a nice way for all of us to like just kind of reconnect every year.
Yeah. Were you guys there at the same time, same years? Is it a 1 year, 2 year fellowship?
No, it's a one year fellowship. So, you know, after I did it, I kind of started to get to know some of the fellows that had done it in the past, just from, you know, going meeting them at meetings and things like that. And then, you know, the fellow that was there right before me ended up joining that practice. And then, so he was kind of like mentoring me through, you know, through the fellowship too. I know part of it for me too, at the time I got married in the first like month of fellowship. I had like 3 or 4 days off of work and I went and got married and, you know, came back. But my wife was in medical school at the time. And so we lived separate. She was in Iowa. I was in St. Louis. So we kind of lived separately for that first year. And so I didn't have a lot going on in St. Louis, which was nice. I was on call all the time. But I feel like because of that, some of the younger docs that were there really kind of like took me under their wing. They invited me to a lot of stuff. So I feel like I got really kind of close with some of the guys there. And obviously now we still keep in touch. So.
And what was this fellowship in, by the way?
You know, it's mostly, I'd say, like TMJ surgery, you know, major reconstruction, and probably a little bit of cosmetics. You know, we operated with an oculoplastic surgeon every Friday doing, you know, eyelid surgery. At the time, I was also visiting a doc by the name of Mike Nyack on Thursdays, but mostly observing him operate. But that was a really great experience, especially for, you know, board prep. You walk through a facelift. I, you know, had seen a ton of them, so and helped him out. So that was great. But, and then, you know, trauma was just part of the gig. You're, you know, any fellowship, you're going to cover lots of trauma. So.
Of course. Wow, you guys covered a lot in that too. Dr. Yanzer, you had the same kind of experiences? You covered everything in the fellowship? Yeah.
No, I actually did a different one. I did my fellowship at Duke in craniomaxillofacial trauma and reconstruction. So, yeah, a little different.
Whoa.
Trauma, a big neurosurgery component, rebuilding craniums, you know, fair amount of just stuffed ORs with everything in terms of orthognathics, big resections, a lot of teamwork along with the big plastics department there. So like I don't do microvascular surgery, but I got really comfortable being the head part of it with doing resection and helping implant it. So I really wanted that experience to get really good at gunshot wounds because in the Army, like, you know, if I go somewhere, that's primarily what we're going to be encountering, right? Blast injuries and gunshots. So I wanted to make sure if I'm going to be a program director and instructor that I could be an absolute expert in that. And learning with my mentor there, Dr. David Powers, who's
Powers, yep.
Very well known and a world expert on ballistics, was one of the best years of my life. It really was.
Did you, and thank you for your service, by the way, did you ever have to be deployed or do you think you'll ever have to be deployed?
I haven't yet. You know, I'd love the opportunity. I would consider it the pinnacle of my profession, all the stuff that we train for to be able to use that. An Army oral surgeon is a like, almost like a division level asset at what we call a field hospital. So somebody hasn't been deployed in probably since 2014-ish because we've owned the airspace in the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. When people get hurt, they're usually in Germany in like 12 hours. I mean, zip, zip. But, you know, the future conflicts, you know, just generally, it's kind of interesting. You know, if we fought what we call a near peer, right, like a Russia or a China sized entity, we might not be able to just fly injuries back and then we would have to be more forward. So. Hopefully that never happens, but if it does, you know, I'm ready to go.
Do you think I'd have to, do you think they would, there would be the cold one when they like pick people out? What's the word called when everyone has to like enlist?
Oh, you're talking about like the draft?
Oh, draft.
The draft. If there's a draft, do you think I could find myself over in the Middle East and China and Russia?
You know, ever since like the problem with draft armies is that they had so many issues like Vietnam when we shifted away from that model. But if something like that happened, I'm sure they would, you know, you wouldn't enlist. You would become a pretty high ranking officer and, you know, hopefully go do surgery things. So
yeah
hopefully, if God forbid, right? Sure. There's always a spot for you, brother.
Dr. Figueroa, are you enlisted? Are you in the military at all?
No. You know, just adjacent with Andrew and our colleague, Joe Ivory. He's also part of the course though. He's retired now, I guess.
Congrats. Excellent. And where are you guys practicing right now? Just if we could run through that real quickly.
Yeah. So I'm the program director of the residency at the military base called Fort Bragg in North Carolina. Been here a couple years and was teaching at the Army base at the residency in Georgia before that. My fellowship in between, but I'll probably be here for quite a while. I absolutely love it here. I have my dream job getting to teach and do big surgery. So I really found my heart and my home in academics and teaching.
Amazing. And this is also good for... One, I know most of this stuff, but for listeners, I think this is really important to get an aspect of like where you guys are at right now. But which state was that again? That's Georgia?
North Carolina currently.
Right. Yeah. You were in Georgia. Now you're in North Carolina. You've loved it.
And yeah, it's a good point. I finished residency in 2019, so it's not like I've been doing this that long. But, you know, I think academics is a cool track as well. And, you know, if you have the passion and interest, you know, I moonlight a little bit and work on the side, you know, familiar with it, but I just really love teaching. So I feel like there's a big part of it where when you start to finish residency and you're at that point, just see what you like and follow your heart, because there's certainly opportunities, I think, in any way. And we, you know, the world always needs more people interested and passionate about teaching. So
yes, and the mentorship behind
there,
it.
You know, give it a consideration, because, you know, you can really help people in the future achieve the same dreams that you've got.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. And how do you manage those? You have a newborn at home. How many kids do you have right now?
Just one. This is our first one, yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah, about a month old, so been trying to juggle that. And it's, you know, I'm usually at the office pretty late every night and, you know, on call a lot and running a program. So we've been trying to figure out the juggling mechanisms of that. And it's been interesting, but I have an amazing wife who's also an ER doc, so... we're figuring it out, you know, one day at a time, and I'm sure you'll be there, you know, sometime soon, and Aaron's gone through it, but...
you guys are both so busy. You have a newborn at home, you got, your wife is an ER doc, so she's always in and out of the house. You guys are, that's rough, so kudos to you guys.
Thanks, man.
Dr. Figueroa, what about you?
I'm in the Chicago area now, so we have, we're in like kind of the north suburbs. We have two offices, soon to be three. We're opening up a third office at the moment, but, you know, fully private practice. But, you know, my partner in practice, or partners, one used to be the chairman at Loyola, and so he enjoys doing lots of kind of bigger surgery. And my younger partner, he and I were residents together in Iowa, so he kind of had the same vision I do. So we still maintain a healthy hospital practice as well as our private practice. So, you know, probably not doing quite as many big cases as I used to, but it still kind of scratches that itch. And we, you know, maintain a kind of a broad practice. So, you know, it's very varied. We don't say no to a lot of stuff that comes in, but, you know, we also do a lot of the regular stuff that everybody does too. So it keeps it fun, but we do a lot of jaw surgery. I'm doing some, you know, alveolar cleft grafts, you know, some pathology, trauma, those types of things. So, but, as Andrew was saying, you know, trauma gets hard. You know, when I was younger, before kids, you know, I didn't mind, you know, trauma as much. You know, it was like, that's fine. I'll get home late and do this case or whatever. But, you know, when you got the kids at home, they want to see you. You want to get home. And, you know, that stuff's always happening after hours. So it gets a little bit more difficult. But we still try and, you know, kind of do our parts. But before I was here, I've been here in Chicago now for like 3.5 years or so. Before that, I was in academics. I was full-time faculty at the University of Iowa for about 5 years after fellowship. And I loved it. As Andrew said, I really enjoyed giving back, teaching. I still miss it. I'm still an adjunct faculty there, and I try and get back, you know, a couple times a year when they call me and need a hand. But I miss it, and I didn't leave academics because I didn't enjoy it. I just, you know, kind of changes in life and things like that. I grew up in the Chicago area, so kind of a homecoming for me. But yeah, I really enjoyed the academic environment and miss it immensely. So the course actually helps kind of scratch that itch at least a little bit.
Yeah. And that's great that you're continuing to do that. You're still an adjunct professor, you know, attending faculty at Iowa. You said your wife's also a physician, and I'm assuming you guys met back in Iowa because you said that she was there when you went to the fellowship.
Yeah, she's got an interesting background. So she and I, we actually met in dental school. So she's a dentist. And then when I started residency, she actually did her residency in oral pathology. She did a year in private practice, then went back and did 3 years in oral pathology, got her master's. And during that time, though, she kind of decided maybe she wanted to go back to med school. So then as I was finishing residency, she was applying for med school. She got accepted at Iowa and matriculated into med school there while I was faculty there, and then and now she's in medical residency for pathology here in Chicago at U of C. So she's gonna be a fourth year resident now, and then she's already signed up for a year of fellowship next year, and then finally maybe she'll get a real job.
Oh my God! Was anyone at that time when you were faculty like dating a med student? Huh?
Yeah.
She's
amazing. Where she's from? Yeah.
And somehow we had, you know, both of our kids while she was in medical school, and I don't know how she does it, but she's an incredibly intelligent and a hard worker.
Yeah. So and where's she from? Is she from the Iowa area or also from the Chicago area?
No, she's kind of from Northwest Iowa. So yeah, her family's mostly there. So when I go back, it's actually nice because I'll bring the kids with me. They can spend some time with my in-laws. I'll go, you know, work at the hospital for a day and see some old friends and spend the weekend there with my in-laws. My wife will usually come out with me. So
it's nice. Yeah. That's nice. And she's in residency now. Where is she in residency?
University of Chicago.
So she is great. She's with you in Chicago. Yeah. Is that going to be where your roots, you're setting your foundation?
Yeah, I mean, I would suspect so. So, you know, she'll have to, after fellowship, during fellowship, I'm sure she'll probably start looking for jobs and see, you know, there's a lot of opportunities here in Chicago, a lot of hospitals and things. And then once she kind of figures out where she's going to land, we'll kind of, you know, figure out maybe where, you know, our forever home might be, whether it's the one we're in now or someplace else. But, you know, her commute, you know, I work north, kind of north of the city, and she works kind of, UFC is like on the way south side of the city. So we're kind of in this middle ground, which it's a great community. I love it. We love our neighbors and my kids and friends and everything. But, depending on where she ends up, her commute may get a little bit easier. And so that may, you know, push us to move closer to, you know, maybe both of our jobs or something like that. So we'll kind of see.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like you said you have two offices right now, three partners, adding on another, a third office soon, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in go mode. You guys are in go mode. That's always an exciting time. Mm-hmm. So excellent. So let's chat about the course a little bit. So 3 days, we get into studying for oral boards, obviously. But when would you guys recommend, like, what month? Because now I want to ask you some personal questions too, because I'm going to try to gear my mind. I started to dabble a little bit in the textbook. Give me a time frame though. Right now, is it right on time? Is it a little early? Is it a little late? Just
yeah. So a touch of backstory that helps kind of clarify some of these things. So like the group here that runs the course, for those of you familiar, we call it the Blue Book, but the Oral Boards Review for Oral Maxillofacial Surgery. The same guys who run the course, you know, primarily Rob Reddy and Damian Finley, and then our entire group is working on the next edition, which should come out later this winter. They did the book first as part of the course to kind of establish the base, but they saw a need for the fact that we just don't do a lot of teaching or helping people get through this space in this particular game with the particular set of rules of how to navigate it. And, you know, as you're diving into it, it's really hard, right? It's so broad, the entire scope in medicine and anesthesia. So picking up just a random textbook, you can lose a ton of time and hours that you don't have. Yeah, exactly. I think most folks might be familiar. It's a great kind of consolidated resource because frankly, there just don't exist that many out there, but the next edition is going to be even better. I use this a lot to study. I took the boards in 2021. We got canceled because of COVID a week before. So we studied for 8 months and then immediately just studied for another 6 months to take it. And then I immediately started helping the next group of people and effectively have been in boards prep mode ever since. And it helps keep me sharp, helps me teach residents. And I just love helping people through this process. Same with all these guys. We love helping people through this pinnacle of our profession, which is the whole, you know, kind of genesis and impetus to start the course, yeah. You know, try to give back and help people get through this. So generally, in my experience, kind of doing this nonstop and helping people get through, my recommendation is this month in August is when you kind of want to start tackling in terms of gently starting to read, listening to podcasts, kind of maximizing your time. And the biggest thing is this test is about half knowledge, but it's half preparation and the things you can actually say. Doesn't really matter, you know, it's not a standardized exam on paper or ProMetric. You have to be able to verbalize it quickly, concisely, and move through and understand the game of working through a mock case. And that's a really particular skill that we don't do a good job as a community of teaching in a residence. And so I usually recommend around this time that people form small groups of about 4 to 6 people and start doing weekly meetings where each person might bring a case, you're tackling a different topic each week, and you're spending a lot of time verbalizing and moving through cases and really just running that from about, you know, starting in early September in the verbalization process until you're ready to take the exam in February. Because it really takes quite a number of months to get comfortable and cover the material to even form a foundation where you still feel incredibly nervous when you actually go there and take it.
Yeah,
Aaron.
I agree 100%. And I think the repetitions are really important. I mean, I think, you know, and this is the time when I felt like it's a good time to start, you know, reviewing kind of the material, you know, making some study guides, you know, making, you know, like, you know, one of the things, you know, Andrew, I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about, but, you know, you need a definition for, you know, medical problems. It's concise, you know, so, you know, what is diabetes, you know, and you need to have a one sentence, you know, kind of one liner, you know, type of deal where you can say, okay, that this is what it is. And so writing those things down and getting that all kind of organized, and then also starting to establish those groups. You can, you know, do mock cases, but maybe those mock cases, you're not timing it, you know, 10 or 12 minutes. You're just letting them run so you can go through them and getting the repetitions in. And then as you kind of move through and get into, you know, November and December, well, now all of a sudden, okay, I have said this now 20 times, you know, it comes out very quickly, very easily, because there's a big portion of having that knowledge. But my feeling is, generally speaking, if you come out of a residency program, you know all this stuff, and it's just a matter of verbalizing it, but also verbalizing it quickly and efficiently, because there's a time component to the exam. If everybody had unlimited time, I feel like 99% of people would get through it. It's the fact that you have to be able to show them, I know this knowledge, I have all this knowledge, in a very, very fast way. And having that all organized and the repetitions, like Andrew was saying, I think are really, really important. So there's a lot of kind of, I feel like, technique and, you know, technique to kind of getting through the exam. It's not just kind of having the knowledge, because I think most people really have that. You just have to organize that and then learn the technique.
And that is specifically what our course does. We have very short, high yield, concise lectures on each topic by masters in it, but it's only the stuff that the most high yield stuff that would show up on the board exam. Like, you know, what do you need to know for this section? Theoretically for the examination. And also, I should have thrown this in earlier, but we are not revealing any protected information. We follow all the ABOMS policies. The stuff we're talking about is only the published, you know, kind of stuff. We respect that.
Of course. Yep.
And then half the course, we're in small groups of 6-8 people, usually with one or two folks rotating through. So you're spending at least half the course with working on these specific strategies to quickly, concisely move through cases, probably score points or however they grade it, and do well. And I don't think there's much like that. There's some other good courses, you know, like I went to Nashville. It's a good course, but you know, you get to go up once if you're lucky to run one case, where at ours, you know, you can, you know, we don't force anybody, but most people get multiple repetitions moving through all types of cases. So, you know, I think it's unique in that way.
That's excellent. And really quickly, the next version that you guys are helping to edit here, Dr. Figueroa, are you in on this as well?
Mm-hmm.
The next.
Yeah. I wrote a couple of chapters in this first version, and then we all are kind of helping out a little bit more on the next version.
Excellent. And when is it coming out, just for listeners that we can get it up, a new and updated version, obviously, right? That's always a big help.
Yeah, we're moving through final edits right now. We are projecting that we'll be done with our piece probably in early November, maybe sooner. But you know, the whole, I've learned the whole publication process and things sometimes take back roads. So don't hold me to that, but as we're turning in chapters, they're kind of getting them ready. So hopefully, you know, December-ish it'll come out, not quite in time for like your group that's about to go through, but you know, hopefully it'll be a good resource for the next folks and residents to study for.
Yeah. Yes. Next year, guys, finishing residency to get an idea of it. I don't know. I mean, there's definitely topics on here that'll help you for the written boards, but this is strictly oral boards prep. And this is what I'm using to study too right now. I've only brushed it a little bit, but yeah. So let's continue. Let me just pull up the flyer for the course again. Obviously, the course, you're going to be doing the cases. I'm planning about a group, and Dr. Jens and I, we talked about this a little bit. I'm planning a group of three, probably four guys in my, I get a group, seven or eight surgeons working for one guy in a, it's like an eight practice model, private, all private, but three or probably four of us are going to be studying for the oral boards. And you were recommending, yeah, we create this group and then one person presents or does the case a week. How would you recommend us doing it? Just like firing questions at it. And then how do we base it? Part two of this question is, how do we base it kind of like exactly how the exam's going to be? Just to put it in perspective, is it going to be like one big table, projector on the back? How many attendings, how many examiners are we expecting around this table? I'm just trying to get a thought, you know, how intimidating it's going to be.
That's fair. I probably won't mention specifics just because I don't want to talk about the actual setting, but needless to say, it is a stressful situation, however it's presented. I think about 4 to 6 is ideal. And my recommendation would be that everybody makes a case every week, because the act of making the case and preparing on the examiner side helps give you insight and learn that information even more. Yeah, with the 4 to 6, it's kind of perfect, because usually at least once a week, somebody has a family thing or work thing and is not there. And then, you know, meeting for somewhere between 90 minutes to 2 hours, something like that. The best thing that you can do is lean on friends and people who have gone before you. And that's why I emphasize so much that, you know, I'm always on these Zoom calls, hopping in and out, making everybody promise who passes the boards that they're going to help the next group, particularly when you start studying, so you can learn to do it the right way, learn to give that mock case and how to kind of move through it. But when you start off, you should not worry about time, kind of like Aaron was saying. You're just asking kind of as many questions as you can. Just pretend you're attending and that you're digging during academics and asking a million questions for each phase of the case, throwing some medicine topics into every case because it's so broad, so it's really hard to cram study that, giving an anesthetic emergency at the end in some fashion, and just moving through kind of the normal case and then the workup, the assessment, variations, the surgical aspect, and then various complications. But it's hard if you don't have that perspective. So bringing somebody in, at least on your first couple sessions, to be like, hey, here's how to do it, or let me give you a few cases, and then I'll watch as you guys do it and give you some feedback about how to move. And pretty quickly, you'll get off and running in the appropriate way. Because you can imagine, if you don't really know what you're doing, sometimes you can go way left to right, and then, you know, your prep is not near as good.
So, I would also say, you know, I think having a group of like, you know, four is good. I think, you know, too big is not good either, because you want to make sure you're getting your repetitions in. But the, you know, the way that, you know, that I did it when I was studying is, you know, obviously we would each, you know, assign each other, hey, you're going to prep a pathology case, you're going to prep a TMJ case or whatever. But then when I had that case, that also I would, you know, go to my study guide and be like, okay, you know, these are things that I think are really probably important that the board might hit on, you know. And so then when I'm doing the case, I would be kind of looking like, are they hitting these points? Are they making me understand that they understand X, Y, and Z things? So like like Andrew was saying, when you're prepping the case, you're kind of also studying and learning it. But then also the person, so you've got one person being the examiner, one person being the examinee, and then the other, you know, one or two people that are there should be listening, and they can be taking notes. And then so they can give you feedback. So at the end of the case, they can say, oh, you know, hey, Brandon, you did X, Y, or Z that I think was really good, but you also did, you know, X, Y, or Z, I think you missed this, or you didn't say this properly, or things like that. So, you know, and they can kind of give feedback too. And I think that's like, that whole thing is really what's going to help you hone that kind of technique in.
I love this. And something that I've been doing for the last 2 weeks or so, just to throw this in there, obviously you guys are familiar with the AI models. I've been plugging in the PDF to one of the AI and I say, like, pretend you're the examiner, expert, board certified oral maxillofacial surgeon, quiz me and like test me and then find out what knowledge I'm missing and fill in the gaps. And it's been doing a decent job. I mean, you have to prompt it like this, including the textbook. Otherwise, it can just kind of go aimlessly. But I think that's going to be an interesting thing that maybe we could talk about on the course, because obviously we're recommending people certain study strategies and stuff. If this works and gets better over time, it might be something to implement, you know, for people who might not be able to get a group.
Yeah.
Something, a way to study on their own. But yeah, just a thought, an idea on the side.
That's super cool. We're trying to really even focus more on the next like version of the blue book. We're increasing substantially in every single chapter, including all the medicine ones, are going to have mock cases, and we're adding mock cases to the ones that already have it. So that if you use it, you at least have an idea about what's a rough guide about how this game kind of looks. Because it is. It's a very particular game with a very particular set of rules. And for the folks I know who don't do well at this, or I help folks who, you know, have failed previous years, and a lot of them do go on to pass, it's because they started studying too late. You know, like November is kind of too late. A lot of folks come and start studying at the St. Louis course, and that's fine. We see a lot of people pass and do well with that. I try to encourage them because I'm like that too, to start in August. But if you start November, December, it is not, it's, you're really getting close to, you know, rolling the dice with something you don't want to miss on, or just not understanding all the things we're talking about, that you have to get through a case in 12 minutes through the workup, diagnosis, treatment planning, patient conversations, the surgery, complications, weird stuff, curveballs, maybe ethical questions thrown in, right? It just goes on and on. And if you don't know how to navigate that concisely and you haven't practiced that a lot, then those people are going in there blind, and I really feel bad for them. That's why we try to spend so much time letting people get used to the system so that it can be successful.
And just two things that you had mentioned here, I would say 2 points of starting late, why that would be a negative is obviously there's so much information that you need to be able to pull out of your pocket on the fly. But something that you said is verbalizing this. You know, it's the oral board exam. It's not a written test. You're not short answering. It's not multiple choice. You need to be able to pull it out fast, but you need to pull out a very wide range of knowledge fast, which doing this little practice thing with the AI model is, I was like, whoa, DKA. Oh, shoot. I definitely know this somewhere in there, but then you can't pull it out in time. If you don't answer in time, it just starts talking and yell. I have it so it curses at you. It's really important. But that's such a good point. And okay, so November, December is kind of late. I got another question for you then, guys. What would be some other negatives, some other not to's? Like, definitely don't do this in addition to starting late, if there's anything you can think of, you know?
They're very clear in their published guide about what not to do. And they'll tell you this, they'll tell you it before, but like, you must show up in the dress code. It's like kind of like once a year somebody doesn't and they tell you leave. So be very careful that you read the guide and you follow it, you know, conservative suit for males and whatever the equivalent is for gals, which I'm not familiar with, but the stuff on there, you know, show up early, because once you get on that bus and go to the testing place, like if you're not on it, like that's it. So traveling the day before, make sure that you give yourself a buffer. Every year there's a horror story about somebody's flight got canceled from a freak storm and then they couldn't get there. You know, making sure that you try to maximize your week before, right? Like going for runs, doing your normal thing, making sure your nutrition is good, your sleep is good, building up to this pretty momentous point. All the factors that you can control to try to optimize, you know, high performance during that window when you actually do it.
Yeah, I agree with Andrew there. And I think traveling wise, you know, I'm a bit of an anxious person in general, but, you know, I got there, you know, like say 2 days before the exam. So I had like a day of a buffer if I had an issue. But I think on that note, though, I didn't bring a bunch of textbooks, you know, or, you know, a bunch of things to be studying in the room the day before the exam. You know, I think it's okay. You know, I had a few things, you know, cancer staging, that's just like certain pure rote memorization stuff that, you know, maybe you just look through to maybe make you feel comfortable like you're doing something. But I essentially didn't really study the night before or that day. I, you know, I worked out, I, you know, watched TV, hung out with some, you know, friends that were also there. And then went to the exam. If you're not ready at that point, you're not ready. So you got to just, you know, kind of trust that you prepared. But yeah, I think definitely getting there early is a good idea. That way you don't have any horror story of missing the exam. I actually wasn't aware of the dress code, but a funny story about that. So, you know, I packed my suit for the, you know, for the exam, and the morning of the exam, I went to, you know, get dressed, and, you know, you're nervous and anxious, you know, it's hard not to be, you know, for an exam like this. And I start unpacking my suit to put it on, and I packed blue golf pants and that were not actually part of my suit. And, you know, they matched good enough or well enough. But like, as I was getting ready, I was like, this is just like the worst way to start the day for my board exam, that I like didn't actually bring my suit. I got the wrong pants with the wrong jacket. All's well that ends well. But it was, I felt like it was like a bad omen when I went into it.
Did they notice?
I would say another nuance of the study process is, as you start to dive into it, you know, most of us don't have the time to really dive deeply into topics during residency, right? You're trying to survive. You're moving case to case, session to session. So at this point, like for you in the next month, you're going to start to read deeper and get down these rabbit holes and start to freak out, because you're going to be like, oh my God, I don't really know about this. You're going to start reading deep into a textbook. 3 hours is going to snap by, and then you're going to be even more kind of, what if they ask me these? I don't know this. You're like, you know, complication, new surgery. You have to be able to back up to and think, you know, there's a concept that I like to espouse that's 30 seconds or less for any procedure, right? You should be able to explain a procedure in about 30 seconds, because you're probably not going to have more time on that. They might ask you, you know, sometimes when I'm giving mock cases, I'll start in the middle of a surgery somewhere. But if they ask you to, you know, describe your approach opening a TMJ, you know, the joint, you should be able to say that in about 30 seconds, not 3 minutes. So you have to really trim those down and be able and ready to answer deeper questions about the layers of the facial nerve. But you really want to try to focus and compress things so that you have like a building block, because it's such a stressful process that about 25% of all your study stuff and what you've prepared and the knowledge in your head is going to disappear when you're tachycardic and sitting there and taking the exam and super nervous. So the more you can kind of practice and build, you know, sound like a madman talking to your AI bot or in the shower, just, you know, okay, I'm describing my approach to this. Describe my approach to this. Okay, I have to do a crank. Describe that. You can break it up into scripts is not the right word, but it's something close, because if you practice verbalizing multiple times the highest yield topics and answers, when you actually get that, you'll at least be able to snap your brain and just kind of start spitting. And as soon as they realize that you probably know what you're talking about, they're probably going to move on. So stacking the deck in your favor mentally with these verbal repetitions, I think is the key, so that you, because when you're thinking on your feet, it can be really hard, right? Treatments and weird cases that we would spend hours going through and thinking about and asking our friends, you're making snap decisions on in 5 seconds. And that's really hard, right? So it's, you want to try to not be thinking on your feet as much as you can. And hopefully talking about things that you've studied at least a majority of the high yield. You're going to get zebras in different areas, right? Weird topics and things. But the exam is probably going to be mostly the common things in our field, right? Like it's much more common that if I was an examiner, you're taking care of patients with asthma and diabetes, as opposed to a weird variant of MS, right? So if you don't know weird variant MS stuff, like, you know, maybe you take your L there. But if you don't know how to take care of safely managing somebody with asthma and diabetes, then I'm more concerned that you might not be a safe surgeon. And to me, if just putting myself in the board shoes, I think safety is a really critical part of this test, right? You're getting that board certified stamp of approval. And if you think about the anesthesia challenges to our models that we're fighting nationally, that is a really big deal. So you really want to make sure you're safe. You know, your emergencies, cold, just everything inside and out, how you're going to manage that and work through those. That's also recommending taking ACLS and PALS in this pre-op period, because that stuff you are certainly going to get asked and have to move through and just know backwards.
Yeah. Good thing I just took that in March and April.
Awesome.
That's a great point. That's a really good point. I have another question for you, Dr. Figueroa. What would you guys say, and you went over this in the introduction, I remember the numbers, but for listeners, what would you say is the pass rate for the oral boards exam, this part two?
Yeah, mostly by hearsay, but I think the historic pass rate is somewhere between high 60s and mid 70s. They've published the data over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
My year was 21 when we had half the people elected not to take it again because the COVID thing. So there was a very high pass rate. I'm guessing because it was only the people like myself who were like, well, I'm going to study another 6 months and just keep going. And it regressed kind of closer to the mean of the high 60s, low 70s. And I think this last year all told was 78%.
Yeah.
But I think I want your listeners to respect that the people taking this exam are all smart people. They're people who have finished OMS residencies. They're very intelligent, doing amazing things. And if you're thinking 25% to 33% of those are failing this test, like, it's hard and it's a very particular game. So I like to give people a little bit of anxiety, not to make them scared, but make them start studying now and not in December, if that makes sense.
I'd say a couple things too I thought about while Andrew was talking. One, you know, he was talking about getting into the weeds when you're kind of, you know, deep diving into some topic. And, you know, there's something that one of the other faculty in the group, Damien Finley, used to say. He used to, you know, you have kind of like what he likes to call your level one questions and your level 10 questions. And if you're getting your level 10 questions, you know, you've probably hit all the things that you're supposed to hit in that portion of the exam, and they've got to ask you more stuff because you have more time. Mm-hmm. So if you're into the weeds and these nitty gritty detail, you know, things, you know, you've probably moved through the information that was like need to know. So, I mean, I'm not saying you should have just a superficial knowledge of things, but you also need to kind of, you've got a lot to study and there's a lot to cover. So, you know, feeding through like this paper versus this paper's, you know, on what level of dissection is required for this type of cancer versus this location. And, you know, the argument, you know, you don't need to probably know that stuff. You know, you need to know kind of what the, you know, most common things are and those types of things. So I wouldn't waste a lot of time getting into the weeds, because if you're getting into that, you probably know the stuff you already need to know. And then in the course itself, you know, you need to have some angst, you know. So, you know, for me, you know, I went to the Nashville course, you know, and I'm not very gregarious. I wasn't going to be going on in front of, 200 people to do a board exam. I think his clubs are in the garage. To do a board exam, but, you know, doing it even in front of, you know, the, you know, 6 to 10 people that are in the small group, it does create some anxiety, because now I got to do this in front of some people. So it creates some angst that I feel like also helps to simulate the actual exam. And then finally, I think the thing that I'd like to tell, you know, when a resident of mine, you know, that I had, or someone calls me, you know, two weeks before the exam, hey, what advice do you have? I usually say, hey, look, and this is what made me calm down. You know, I was very nervous walking into the first, you know, into the first session. And all of a sudden, though, I thought to myself, I just took like maybe 5 seconds in my own head and just kind of was quiet for a sec and thought, you know what, this is all stuff that I've seen, I currently do or have done. And they just want to know that I know how to do this safely and have some working knowledge. I mean, yes, when it comes to cosmetics or to, you know, head and neck cancer, was I doing that stuff? No. But, you know, I had a working knowledge of it. And so rather than kind of getting anxious about it, you know, they present you a case, you know, and I would, instead of getting out of this like total exam, you know, mindset, I just said, okay, I'm in clinic and, you know, this case shows up at my front door, you know, what am I going to do? And then I would just start walking through that. And then all of a sudden it just kind of started coming out a lot more organically. All the stuff you practice is just coming out because you're like, this stuff, I'm going to see this stuff. I'm going to get called in for, you know, a gunshot wound or a panfacial trauma, and I have to walk into the ED and look at this scan and figure out, okay, X, Y, and Z is going on. How do I look through that and make those decisions? And I think when you kind of calm down and bring it to, hey, how would I manage this? I saw this in residency of, 3 months ago, and we dealt with it and took care of it. And I think when you get into that mindset, it definitely helped me calm down a lot.
Excellent. Yeah. And guys, I do know you're busy. Let me pull up the course again one more time. Dr. Figueroa, when you walked in with golf pants in your out, did they notice?
No, they didn't, but it was and they were like, it's a blue suit that I wore and the pants were blue. So it kind of matched still, but it was like, it was just kind of, you're like, did this really happen for my board exam? Like,
cool about it? Or are they like that strict where they would,
Oh yeah. It still looked professional. So, I don't think they were going to. I don't think they were going to kick me out.
Yeah, because I think it's a good idea that you're obviously, and dressed professionally, but like that they kick you out. I mean, obviously you're not going to walk in scrubs, right? But I guess they kick people out if they do that.
I've heard that. Now, these are kind of, there's all these like anecdotes that are passed on through boards, kind of stuff. So, I think it does lay out pretty quickly. And when you look through the ABOMS guide, it does say the dress code and, Aaron was certainly like within that or, close to it. But, if you showed up in PJs, I think they would tell you to get lost. So, yeah, take it seriously. Because I don't want anybody to be in that situation. You know what I mean?
Well, have a thought through that. I think your appearance, you don't want that to be something that already gives you a negative check mark. Not that it necessarily should, but, you should show up,
just impressed.
In a professional looking manner, you want to be, you don't want anything to be working against you, from the get go. So, I think showing up in professional, attire is always a safe bet.
Absolutely. Guys, any questions that I didn't ask that you think are really good for me to know, for listeners to know, anything,
We just appreciate this because just bringing awareness of this process, it's still, we try to do so much with like the course focused on this aspect and, the residents that we meet and touch in our lives, but there's still so much just complete ignorance of the process. And it's such an important milestone. A common question that I think is very reasonable to ask is why do this at all, right? You are never as smart as you will be right when January, right when you sit to take the exam. Like, it is incredible how you start to laterally connect all these things. And it makes you incredibly safe. So this whole process makes you a much better surgeon and provider, which is awesome for your patients. More things are developing, from my 10,000 foot view, companies are looking at trying to, tie board certification to maybe things like malpractice or, you being hired. But it's a really important part of our profession, and it's certainly worth it to do. I certainly understand the argument that it can be scary and a ton of time and cost and effort, but I picture those people, my mentors, and, I'm like, I want to be like them when I finish residency, and boards was certainly part of that. So, we love helping people through the process. That's why we do this course. It's a lot of fun. We think we have a unique product that there's not really a replica of. There's really no other place where you can sit down and have a very close time with all of us working on these specific skills to make you successful at this.
And I think, when we kind of got together to do this, we obviously felt like there was kind of a gap in a course like we provide. But I also think that we all feel very strongly that it's really important to, move through and get your board certification. I think in some other, fields, board certification is oftentimes tied into hospital privileges. So if you have those hospital privileges, you have to, have board certification at a certain juncture. They give you a certain amount of years. But that's, in our specialty, there's a lot of our cohort that, maybe don't want to maintain hospital privileges. And that's okay. That's totally fine. But I do think that, as Andrew was saying, I think the board exam is, holds a lot of value. I think there's, like he said, there's also companies looking at kind of tying this into, liability coverage and things like that. But also, there's people that came before us that worked so hard for us to be in hospitals, for us to be doing head and neck cancer and cosmetics. And whether, you want to do that or not, it's part of our specialty. And it's important that we have a working knowledge of those things. And it kind of sets, a bar of a standard. Hey, as a practicing oral surgeon, you really should know, have this kind of baseline level of knowledge. And I think that's really important. And I think maintaining that and maintaining, making sure that, you know, our specialty has that knowledge is what's going to maintain the scope of our specialty. And I certainly don't want that scope to start narrowing because, you know, we're not, you know, maintaining that knowledge and doing those things. So I think the board is a really good thing. I think everybody should consider doing it. And people that are nervous about, you know, failing, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You could fail, you know, your life will go on. You're still going to be an oral surgeon. You can take it again. But you know, there's worse things in the world than that. So, I mean, I would encourage anybody that, is not sure if they want to do it or not, just do it. I mean, just do it and try it. And more than likely you're going to put some effort into it and you're going to pass. But you know, the worst thing that could happen is you can fail and you can always retake it. So, you know, it's definitely a worthwhile endeavor and I would encourage everybody to do it.
And another thing, exactly what you said, it levels the playing field too. That's what someone was telling me where it's like, you might, at least patients, for example, they might look at a 6-year oral surgeon with the MD versus a 4-year oral surgeon like me without the MD. And it levels the playing field if you're both board certified. I think that's also important to consider too. And someone was explaining it to me. I was like, you know, sometimes we forget to look at it from the patient perspective, you know? And in addition to that, it's like you get all your ducks in a row when you're prepared for the emergencies, like you said, Dr. Yenzer. So guys, thanks so much for coming on this morning. Take time from your busy day. You guys got kids, you got newborns, you're running around, you got the course coming up. Also, guys, for the future, maybe we make this a yearly promotion, you know, where we chat through how to prepare for the oral board exam, what you're going to be going through on the course, and the timeline for people, you know, what to expect, the definitely do not do this or that for the exam, but then also the timeline of when to start. I think August is a really good time for this. It's kind of before the year kind of kicks off with some people with kids going back to school. I mean, you can name a million things, but thanks for coming on today. I really like this and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys at the course.
Hey, absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having us. And yes, we'd love to. If you happen to get listener feedback about other specific more, you know, hey, we'd love to hear more about this specific thing, let us know. We're happy to hop on sooner if, you know, about whatever in the process to help clear things up and to help propagate the knowledge. But thank you so much. And yeah, if you're out there, we really hope to see you at the course. And yeah, we'll see you there too, my friend.
Thank you. Hey, guys, that's actually great. Maybe we do a part two, a quicker one, maybe a quick 15, 20, 30 minutes tops, end of October, middle end of October after the course, just to kind of brush up on some things. I'll compile a bunch of questions for you from people that have listened to this.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. That's a great idea.
And I'm more than happy to, I don't know if you have like show notes or something like that. I'm more than happy to, I can email you, you know, I can give you my personal email. I'm more than happy for people that listen if they want to reach out. Either to ask questions about the course or, you know, just about boards prep. I'm happy to help anybody out.
Same, man. Yeah. You're welcome to throw my Gmail in there. Anybody's always welcome to reach out. You know, happy to be a point of clarity or help for anybody.
You're okay with that? I get put you guys in the caption of the podcast, YouTube, everywhere I put
this.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
Perfect. That'll help so many people out that'll be doing. And it won't just be this year too. It'll be years in the future. Because like when you post it on YouTube, when people search oral surgery, oral boards prep, you know, YouTube's second biggest search engine, that's going to come up year after year, which I'm noticing with CBSC prep that I've helped with. So guys, great. Anyway, I don't want to keep you longer, but have a good weekend. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
And we'll,
thanks for having us.
We'll touch base. All right, guys.